What we learn from the other, we learn about ourselves. The honor with which we regard the other unmasks our own theology of creation. The way we react to the needs of the other tells us something about our own needs. The attention we give another exposes our real sense of the breadth and depth of the universe and stretches it beyond ourselves. We see in others the kind of commitment it takes to go on believing when our own belief falters. We look to others for the kind of vision that expands our own beyond the daily. We depend on others for the kind of wisdom that exceeds mere answers. We hold on to others to find the kind of love that makes life rich with meaning, certain proof of the everlasting love of a creator for whom there is no word. Clearly, in the serious contemplation of our place in the human community lies the quality of our contemplation. To be a real contemplative today, we must every day take others into the narrow little confines of our lives and listen to their call to us to be about something greater than ourselves. Good morning, beloved friends. And welcome back to our continued journey through the sixth chapter of the Gospel according to Mark. This is the third and final Sunday of making our way through this brief but densely packed narrative of an important chapter of Jesus' ministry. So let's recap. We entered this chapter 2 weeks ago, hearing how Jesus was rejected for being a hometown guy that made good. And then, as he calls his 12 disciples, warns them that they too might face that same kind of rejection. He charged them to go out in pairs, taking minimal provisions and maximum faith. And then, when their work is done, to come back and share their stories. We framed this reading with the wonderful words from Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech, in which he reminds us that we too will face rejection and critique in our circumstances, in the arenas of our lives. Hateful, unengaged, critical, self-serving voices will always try to drown out our acts of courage and vulnerability, and they are simply distracting and unhelpful. We were invited to name those unhelpful, distracting voices Twitter thugs and risk courage over comfort, to simply stop listening and instead respond to the gospel from a place of love, moving forward for what is good. Then last week, we picked up where we left off and heard the horrendous story of the beheading of John the Baptist. We were invited into a virtual hallway to imagine two doors, one labeled survival and the other surrender. These doors were used to move us into considering our agency, our ability to recognize that we have choices and power to act at every turn. We heard that agency is both a gift and a responsibility to act and react, based on our values and our promises we make to live our lives as faithful witnesses of the gospel. When we opened the door labeled surrender, we were welcomed by a chorus of people and a plethora of stories, all representing defiant hope, the promise that love wins, even in the midst of a muddy arena. So here we are today for the last and final installment of our lectionary trip through the sixth chapter of Mark. But before we go any further into the verses for today, I think I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge what we did not hear. Did you notice that the prescribed verses today skipped over 19 fairly significant verses of Scripture? What we did not hear today and just skipped over were two fairly significant miracles. Both Jesus' feeding of the 5,000, you know, that story about five loaves and two fish and everybody gets fed, that one, fairly significant. And then right after that, Jesus shoving all the disciples in a boat, and then when they're scared and he's on the land, the storm is blowing, it's early pre-dawn, and he decides to walk on water. We did not hear either of those two stories. So what did we hear instead, and why weren't these important miracles included, as we have now made our way through the whole of chapter 6, excluding those 19 verses? I believe what we heard this morning was an important invitation, and an important invitation of how we, specifically here at Trinity, are called to live into becoming a healthy Christian community. And it is why I began a few minutes ago with that wonderful piece on community by Benedictine nun and prolific author and speaker Joan Chittister. Now, at first, that suggestion might seem odd. It did to me at first, but let me explain. It might be more obvious to use the text we just heard in Mark to simply underscore the importance of rest, the need that we all have, Jesus and the disciples included, for some Sabbath time. It might be a good and worthy message to remind us all that we are commanded to rest and resist the ever-present drive we have to do more and more in less and less time, often working ourselves to the point of utter exhaustion. And while that message is, of course, good and worthy, I want to suggest just a different spin on what we heard. The disciples, in fact, have just come back from their first missional maiden voyage, we would say, and oh, the blisters and tired bones they must have to prove it, along with some incredible stories to share. They must have been both exhausted and exhilarated, stories of welcome, and probably a few stories about some Twitter thugs that they encountered along the way. Maybe some moments of doubt, and maybe some wonderful glimpses into the world of possibility and transformation. All in all, it sounds like, and we can understand, that they needed some time with their Rebbe, their teacher, to eat and drink and rest and process all that they had been through. And maybe, though the text doesn't say explicitly, I have wondered if Jesus was worn out just a bit himself. He must have been grieving the loss of John the Baptist, you know, his cousin, who had just been killed in such a horrid way. It must have been heartbreaking to have lost him through the violence of murder. Anyone who has experienced that kind of loss would understand the depth of his grief. So out of his own longing, perhaps, and certainly for the love of his disciples, Jesus responds to what I think is one of the most beautiful lines in our text. Come away. Come away to a place all by yourselves and rest a while. When have we heard those words in our lives, and how have we responded? I heard them in August of 2011, when a friend invited me to join her and a few other women for a week of camping on North Manitou Island in Lake Michigan. Reachable only by ferry and without cars, the island is nearly 8 miles long and just over 4 miles wide, with 20 miles of pristine shoreline. Over the course of those 7 days, I remember experiencing a kind of total decompressing, that kind that often is elusive day to day, an intentional time of literally unplugging and disconnecting to and from everything other than the land, the friends I was camping with, and the way that we chose to spend that sacred time. I am so grateful that I took the time after that trip to make one of these simple photo books after I returned home. And I found it yesterday, And I was able to relive some of the wonderful moments that that trip afforded. I also recorded some of the quotes that the group used each night as we created a sacred circle for prayer and to reflect on our day and how each of us was living into this gift of time. So as I sat with the gospel text on one side and then the invitation to come away, I was tempted at first just to reflect on the need for the gift of Sabbath. Like I said, the parallels are obvious and important. Not a person here, I think, this morning wouldn't benefit from the gift of sacred rest, of time when we cease from activities that often consume and dictate the otherwise natural rhythms of our lives. And yet, when I went back to the text, I noticed something that I hadn't noticed earlier. And it was something significant to me and I think our ministry here in this place. So I had to change my focus just a bit, or maybe just to expand my focus a little bit. You see, not once, but twice, Jesus gets his disciples in a boat to go away for some much-needed R&R. And not once, but both times. How'd that work out for them? Not quite the way they had planned, right? Both times, rather than taking a beautiful 40-minute ferry ride across Lake Michigan to discover a peaceful island with no cars and perfect low-impact camping, Jesus and his cohorts were found out as words of their ministry spread. Both times when Jesus and his disciples arrive on those shores, they find a crowd waiting for them. The crowd wants to hear what Jesus has to say. It's part of the human experience to seek out what we find lacking in our lives. The crowd is hungry for hope. They want wholeness. And the word is out that Jesus offers something about hope. And this is when our story takes a different turn. Rather than get in the boat or back on the ferry for a different, possibly less populated destination, Mark tells us this. Jesus had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. Even though Jesus must have been tired and hungry, and my family, we might even say a little hangry, he gives the crowd what they need most above his own needs. He stops, he regroups, and he refocuses on people in front of him, the ministry that he's called to, the path that he said yes to from the moment he came out of the wilderness and set his intention to be God's love in the world. He sees people whose lives are chaotic as they try to provide for their families. He sees people who are confused by the changes in the world about them. He sees people fearful of others who are not just like them. He sees people who simply have lost their way. He sees people who are hungry for reassurance and long for words of hope. And his response is not to draw away, but to lean in and to offer compassion and hope and mercy and love. So what do we do with this part of the text when we are in need of Sabbath rest? Surely I couldn't be standing here this morning telling us it is not important to get into the boats that lead us to our own Manitou Islands from time to time. No, my friends, I am not suggesting that at all. Surely we need times of no cell phones and emails and planners and meetings to remember who and how we were created to be as beloved children of God. Yes, of course we do. So what I'm starting to think about is some kind of integrated balance. This text seems to invite us to consider how and what we share in this ministry. And if we might find deeply meaningful ways to lean into and onto each other during the various seasons of our lives. In other words, I am hearing and seeing an embrace of both rest and compassion. It's not an either-or choice. And it can be both, if and only if it is a choice that we as a community make together. A choice that requires mutuality and support and understanding and forgiveness and lots of love. The work we have to do at Trinity is not solely dependent on any one person. And that, I am learning, is a beautiful thing. It is the work of a beloved community. And in fact, I believe the more we learn how to live into that way of doing this kind of beautiful dance of moving back and forth between rest and compassion as a community, the more alive and energized our life together will be. When I sat and thought and prayed about it yesterday, I was just overwhelmed by the numbers of examples I'm seeing every day. I watched the staff and volunteers in our resale shop next to New this week greet and serve person after person who came in for an inexpensive item or two, or 32, a few, and each person leaving, having been loved and seen and afforded dignity and respect. I was at Aurora House to visit some of our new friends, and there I saw once again the love of one of our longtime members who goes every week unannounced to give her support and love to women who are trying to make decisions about a new way of life. I met with a member who was on fire about a new national program connecting young adults getting ready to age out of the foster care system, and a program that joins a small group of people around that individual, walking with them for a year. And today we have visitors here that are going to help us start a conversation about the possibility of starting a pastoral care listening ministry called the Befrienders. These are just four of the countless examples of what is being birthed here in this place with God's help and through the collective hands and hearts of this community. So now, when I get ready to step back for a summer vacation week after next, I'm going to do so remembering this. I'm going to do so with the reminder that y'all got this. And that, in fact, it is necessary and good that we live into this dance of balance. The beauty and wholeness of how we live into balance in community, of rest and response, of Sabbath and support, of stepping away and leaning into good work and beautiful work, is a good reminder today. For some of us, it's kind of scary to admit our dependency on each other, let alone to a God that sometimes feels elusive at best. So I want to end this morning back where I began, with the hope that maybe now you will hear these beautiful words as an invitation to who and how God calls us, to be community together, a ministry we share, learning and growing into what it means to become the beloved body of Christ. What we learn from the other, we learn about ourselves. The honor with which we regard the other unmasks our own theology of creation. The way we react to the needs of the other tells us something about our own needs. The attention we give to another exposes our real sense of the breadth and depth of the universe and stretches it beyond ourselves. We see in others the kind of commitment it takes to go on believing when our own belief falters. We look to others for the kind of vision that expands our own beyond the daily. We depend on others for the kind of wisdom that exceeds mere answers. We hold on to others to find the kind of love that makes life rich with meaning, certain proof of the everlasting love of a creator for whom there is no word. You are, we are, God's beloved. May it be so.